Welcome back to Between the Bar Lines. I'm your host, Dr. Maeve Barry. I am excited again to continue our chat about 19th century opera, with today's focus being on the works of Richard Wagner. We will learn that Wagner wasn't just a composer in this episode. He was a dramatist, philosopher, and provocateur whose ideas reshaped what opera could be. His music is monumental, and his legacy is also deeply complicated. Born in Leipzig in 1813, Richard Wagner emerged in the mid-19th century with a radical vision and new idea for the future of opera. He rejected what came before him, which was the traditional structure of arias and recitatives, believing that music and drama should be one seamless whole. I've already mentioned this term that I'm going to explain in a couple of episodes this season, but this is what became his defining philosophy, the Gesamtkunstwerk, or total work of art. So Wagner wanted to unify all artistic disciplines. That means music, poetry, drama, visual design, everything, into a single immersive experience. And in his operas, everything was the story. The orchestra became a voice of its own, the singers were essentially actors first, and the boundaries between all of these art forms dissolved. To achieve this, Wagner pioneered the use of what he called leitmotifs. So leitmotifs are short musical themes that could represent characters, emotions, or ideas. You can hear them woven throughout his scores, and they aren't always the same. They constantly transform as the drama unfolds. If you've ever taken a deep dive into Wagner opera, either in a class, analyzing things, or if you've performed it, typically at the beginning or at the end of the score, there's an index or an appendix of all of these different leitmotifs that are used in the opera that you're doing, essentially, and how they also transform. There are also lots of websites online where scholars have compiled all of these leitmotifs, and they are really interesting to look at if you're into that. So this innovation didn't just stop with Wagner. It would influence film composers like John Williams and Howard Shore, and even other opera composers like Puccini and Verdi, as we'll soon hear in the next couple of episodes. We can divide Wagner's career into two main periods: his early romantic operas and then his later, more mature works. So his earlier operas, like The Flying Dutchman and Tannhäuser, still have these traces of romanticism in there. So there are lush melodies involved in these. But even here, his operas were more dramatic than ever before. We also have Lohengrin with its famous wedding march, and we see Wagner moving toward a more symbolic and mythic style. Then came his great epic that we know as The Ring Cycle, Der Ring des Nibelungen. And as you can imagine, a huge feat like this, I mean, several hours of several operas, he didn't just write this quickly. It took him 26 years to write this four-opera saga. And it's considered to be one of the most ambitious artistic projects in history. Just a little bit about The Ring Cycle. It's drawing on Norse and Germanic mythology. He created this universe of gods, heroes, and the ultimate destiny, accompanied by this music that was emotional, yet had such an orchestral power. And The Ring if you get the chance to see all four in action, it's not just an opera, it's an experience. It requires nearly 15 hours to perform, and it really pushes everyone involved to their limits. You could say that this is the purest realization of the Gesamtkunstwerk, so the blending of myth, philosophy, and sound. Now, his second period, the later works, continued this evolution. We get masterworks like Tristan und Isolde, which broke ground on its unresolved harmonies, and it ultimately paved the way for modern music, essentially. We also have Die Meistersinge von Nürnberg, which was comedy, but also blending with art theory. And then Parsifal, his final work, explored redemption and also spirituality in music, and it kind of feels suspended in between those two worlds. Now, Wagner's ambition extended beyond composition. He dreamed of creating a theater specifically designed for his operas, and that dream became a reality with Bayreuth Festspielhaus, which was built in Bavaria in the 1870s. Now, not to get too much into this, but it was funded largely by King Ludwig II of Bavaria, and it was unlike any other opera house. So imagine, like, a composer just coming to you being like, hey, you're a contractor, can you build me an opera house where we're literally only going to do my operas? And hey, by the way, these are literally music and life-changing operas that nobody's ever done before, and the orchestra's huge, and the singers also have to be huge. I just can't imagine somebody saying that, but this place in Bayreuth was like unlike any other opera house. The orchestra was hidden beneath the stage, and the acoustics were perfectly tailored to the music that was going to be performed. So the focus was entirely on the drama itself. Now, every summer, the Bayreuth Festival still stages Wagner's works, and it continues a tradition that remains one of the most revered and exclusive events in classical music. And now we get to the point where Wagner's story isn't just about how innovative and beautiful his operas were. It's also about controversy, ideology, and prejudice. Wagner, as we know, was openly anti-Semitic, and he expressed hateful views in both his personal writings and public essays. His 1850 pamphlet, Das Judentum in der Musik, or Jewishness in Music, attacked Jewish composers, especially Felix Mendelssohn and Giacomo Meyerbeer, another opera composer at the time, accusing them of corrupting German art. These views were not isolated rants. Anti-Semitism was deeply woven into Wagner's worldview. And we see this in his often use of anti-Semitic stereotypes in his writings and possibly in his operatic characters as well. Decades after his death, his music and his ideas were co-opted by Adolf Hitler and the Nazi regime, who basically idolized Wagner as the embodiment of German art. So this is where we're really getting into not good territory. And Hitler's obsession with Wagner cast a long, troubling shadow over his legacy. Even though Wagner himself died in 1883, which was obviously long before the Third Reich. But today, audiences and musicians continue to wrestle with his legacy because of this. How do we separate Wagner's artistic genius from his extreme moral failures? Can we celebrate the music without endorsing these ideologies? And obviously, this is no easy question to answer, but it's definitely a conversation that keeps his name alive, and I find it to be an extremely essential conversation when we are talking about his music. Now, despite, or even perhaps because of the controversies, Wagner's impact on music is immeasurable. His harmonic innovations influence Mahler, Debussy, Strauss, you name it. His orchestral writing helped shape film music, and this concept of Gesamtkunstwerk transformed how we think about multimedia art. His operas remain among the most demanding and profound in the repertoire, challenging audiences to engage not with just art, but also with history, ideology, and the human capacity for both greatness and cruelty. Overall, Richard Wagner changed the sound of Western music, and he also forced us to question what art can and should mean. His music invites awe and unease in equal measure, a reminder that this artistic genius can coexist with moral blindness. Next episode, we will explore how Giuseppe Verdi created a very different vision of opera, one rooted not in myth and psychology and philosophy like Wagner, but one in human emotion. Join me next time on Between the Bar Lines.